tied her up. When she heard her door open, she whimpered softly, praying he wouldn't tie her this time. She wouldn't fight. She wouldn't. If he just didn't tie her up. If he just didn't hold his hand over her mouth, she wouldn't scream or call out. "Where's my little girl? Where's my good little girl?" Tears gathered in the corner of her eyes as his hand slipped under the sheets, poking, probing, pinching. She could smell his breath on her face, sweet like candy. His fingers rammed inside her, his other hand coming down hard over her mouth as she drew in breath to scream. She couldn't help it. "Be quiet." His breath was coming in short gasps, in a sickening arousal she didn't understand. His fingers dug into her cheeks where bruises would form by morning. "Be a good girl. There's a good girl." She couldn't hear his grunts for the screaming inside her head. She screamed it over and over and over. "No, Daddy. No, Daddy. No!" The scream ripped out of Eve's throat as she reared up in bed. Goose flesh prickled on her clammy skin, and she shivered and shivered as she tugged the blankets up. "Didn't remember. Wouldn't remember," she comforted herself, and drew up her knees, pressed her forehead against them. Just a dream, and it was already fading. She could will it away, had done so before, until there was nothing left but the faint nausea. Still shaky, she got up, wrapped herself in her robe to combat the chill. In the bath, she ran water over her face until she was breathing evenly again. Steadier, she got herself a tube of Pepsi, huddled back into bed, and switched on one of the 24-hour news stations, and settled down to wait. It was the lead story at 6 a.m., the headline read by a cat-eyed Nadine. Eve was already dressed when the call came through, summoning her to Cop Central. Chapter 17. Whatever personal satisfaction Eve felt on finding herself part of the team who questioned Simpson, she hid it well. In deference to his position, they used the Office of Security Administration rather than an interrogation area. The clear wrap of windows and the glossy acrylic table didn't negate the fact that Simpson was in deep trouble. The beading of sweat above his top lip indicated he knew just how deep. "The media is trying to injure the department," Simpson began, using the statement meticulously prepared by his senior aide, "with the very visible failure of the investigation into the brutal deaths of three women. The media is attempting to incite a witch hunt. As chief of police, I'm an obvious target." "Chief Simpson." Not by the flicker of an eyelash did Commander Whitney expose his inner glee. His voice was grave, his eyes somber. His heart was celebrating. "Regardless of the motive, it will be necessary for you to explain the discrepancy in your books." Simpson sat frozen while one of his attorneys leaned over and murmured in his ear, "I have not admitted to any discrepancy. If one exists, I'm unaware of it." "Unaware, Chief Simpson, of more than $2 million? I've already contacted my accounting firm. Obviously, if there was a mistake of some nature, it was made by them." "Will you confirm or deny that the account numbered 478-91127-499 is yours?" After another brief consultation, Simpson nodded. "I will confirm that." To lie would only tighten the noose, he thought. Whitney glanced at Eve. They'd agreed the account was an IRS matter. All they'd wanted was for Simpson to confirm. "Will you explain, Chief Simpson, the withdrawal of $100,000 in $25,000 increments every 3 months during the past year?" Simpson tugged at the knot of his tie. "I see no reason to explain how I spend my money, Lieutenant Dallas." "Then perhaps you can explain how it is those same amounts were listed by Sharon DeBlas and accredited to you."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"We have evidence that you paid to Sharon DeBlas $100,000 in $25,000 increments in 1 year's period." Eve waited a beat. "That's quite a large amount between casual acquaintances."
"I have nothing to say on the matter."
"Was she blackmailing you?"
"I have nothing to say."
"The evidence says it for you.
Eve stated. She was blackmailing you. You were paying her off. I'm sure you're aware there are only two ways to stop extortion, Chief Simpson. One, you cut off the supply. Two, you eliminate the blackmailer. This is absurd. I didn't kill Sharon. I was paying her like clockwork. Chief Simpson. The elder of the team of lawyers put a hand on Simpson's arm, squeezed. He turned his mild gaze to Eve. My client has no statement to make regarding Sharon DeBlas. Obviously, we will cooperate in any way with the Internal Revenue Service's investigation into my client's records. At this time, however, no charges have been made. We're here only as a courtesy and to show our goodwill. Were you acquainted with a woman known as Lola Starr? Eve shot out. My client has no comment. Did you know licensed companion Georgie Castle? Same response, the lawyer said patiently. You've done everything you could to roadblock this murder investigation from the beginning. Why? Is that a statement of fact, Lieutenant Dallas? The lawyer asked. Or an opinion? I'll give you facts. You knew Sharon DeBlas intimately. She was hosing you for $100,000 a year. She's dead, and someone is leaking confidential information on the investigation. Two more women are dead. All the victims made their living through legal prostitution, something you oppose. My opposition of prostitution is a political, moral, and personal stance, Simpson said tightly. I will support wholeheartedly any legislation that outlaws it, but I would hardly eliminate the problem by picking off prostitutes one at a time. You own a collection of antique weapons, Eve persisted. I do, Simpson agreed, ignoring his attorney. A small, limited collection, all registered, secured, and inventoried. I'll be more than happy to turn them over to Commander Whitney for testing. I appreciate that, Whitney said, shocking Simpson by agreeing. Thank you for your cooperation. Simpson rose, his face a battleground of emotion. When this matter is cleared up, I won't forget this meeting. His eyes rested briefly on Eve. I won't forget who attacked the Office of Chief of Police and Security. Commander Whitney waited until Simpson sailed out, followed by his team of attorneys. When this is settled, he won't get within 100 yards of the Office of Chief of Police and Security. I needed more time to work on him. Why'd you let him walk? His isn't the only name on the DeBlas list, Whitney reminded her. And there's no tie, as yet, between him and the other two victims. Whittle the list down. Get me a tie, and I'll give you all the time you need. He paused, shuffling through the hard copies of the documents that had been transmitted to his office. Dallas, you seemed very prepared for this interview, almost as if you'd been expecting it. I don't suppose I need to remind you that tampering with private documents is against the law. No, sir. I didn't think I did. Dismissed. As she headed for the door, she thought she heard him murmur, "Good job," but she might have been mistaken. She was taking the elevator to her own section when her communicator blipped. Dallas, call for you, Charles Monroe. I'll get back to him. She snagged a cup of sludge masquerading as coffee and what might have been a donut as she passed through the bullpen area of the records section. It took nearly 20 minutes for her to requisition copies of the discs for the three homicides. Closeting herself in her office, she studied them again. She reviewed her notes, made fresh ones. The victim was on the bed each time. The bed rumpled each time. They were naked each time. Their hair was mussed. Eyes narrowed, she ordered the image of Lola Starr to freeze. Pull into close-up. Skin-reddened left buttocks, she murmured. Missed that before. Spanking? Domination thrill? Doesn't appear to be bruising or welting. Have Feeney and Hansen determine. Switch to DeBlas tape. Again, Eve ran it. Sharon laughed at the camera, taunted it, touching herself, shifting. Freeze image. Quadrant. Shit. Try 16. Increase. No marks, she said. Continue. Come on, Sharon, show me the right side just in case. Little more. Freeze. Quadrant 12, increase.
No marks on you. Maybe you did the spanking, huh?
Run castle disc. Come on, Georgie, let's see.
She watched the woman smile, flirt, lift a hand to smooth down her tousled hair.
Eve already knew the dialogue perfectly.
That was wonderful. You're terrific.
She was kneeling, sitting back on her haunches, her eyes pleasant and companionable. Silently, Eve began to urge her to move, just a little, shift over. Then Virginia yawned delicately, turned to fluff the pillows.
Freeze!
Oh, yeah, paddled you, didn't he? Some guys get off on playing bad girl and daddy.
She had a flash, like a stab of a knife through the brain.
Memory sliced through her, the solid slap of a hand on her bottom, stinging, the heavy breathing.
You have to be punished, little girl. Then Daddy's gonna kiss it better. He's gonna kiss it all better.
Jesus. She rubbed shaking hands over her face. Stop. Put it away.
Put it away.
She reached for cold coffee and found only dregs. The past was past, she reminded herself, and had nothing to do with her, nothing to do with the job at hand. Victim 2 and 3 show marks of abuse on buttocks. No marks on victim 1. She let out a long breath, took in a slow one. Steadier. Break in pattern. Apparent emotional reaction during first murder, absent in subsequent 2. Her link buzzed. She ignored it. Possible theory. Perpetrator gained confidence, enjoyment in subsequent murders. Note, no security on victim 2. Time lapse on security cameras, victim 3, 33 minutes less than victim 1. Possible theory. More adept, more confident, less inclined to play with victim. Wants the kick faster.
Possible, possible, she thought, and her computer agreed after a jittery wheeze with a 96.3 probability factor. But something else was clicking as she ran the 3 disks so closely together, interchanging sections.
Split screen, she ordered, victims 1 and 2 from beginning.
Sharon's cat smile, Lola's pout.
Both women looked toward the camera, toward the man behind it, spoke to him.
Freeze images, she said so softly only the sharp ears of the computer could have heard her.
Oh, God. What have we here?
It was a small thing, a slight thing, and with the eyes focused on the brutality of the murders, easily missed. But she saw it now, through Sharon's eyes, through Lola's.
Lola's gaze was angled higher.
The height of the beds could account for it, Eve told herself, as she added Georgie's image to the screen. Each woman had their head tilted. After all, they were sitting. He very likely standing, but the angle of the eyes, the point at which they stared, only Sharon's was different. Still watching the screen, Eve called Dr. Mira.
I don't care what she's doing, Eve spat at the drone working reception. It's urgent.
She snarled as she was put on hold and her ears assaulted with mindless sugary music.
Question, she said the moment Mira was online.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Is it possible we have 2 killers?
A copycat?
Unlikely, Lieutenant, given as much of the method and style of the murders has been kept under wraps.
Shit leaks. I've got breaks in pattern. Small ones, but definite breaks.
Impatient, she outlined them. Theory, Doctor. The first murder committed by someone who knew Sharon well, who killed on impulse, then had enough control to clean up behind himself well. The second 2 are reflections of the first crime, fine down, thought through, committed by someone cold, calculating, with no connection to his victims. And goddammit, he's taller.
It's a theory, Lieutenant. I'm sorry, but it's just as likely, even more so, that all 3 murders were committed by one man who grows more calculating with each success. In my professional opinion, no one who wasn't privy to the first crime, to the stages of it, could have so perfectly mirrored the events in the second 2.
Her computer had ditched her theory as well, with a 48.5. Okay, thanks. Deflated, Eve disconnected. Stupid to be disappointed, she told herself. How much worse could it be if she were after two men instead of one? Her link buzzed again. Teeth bared in annoyance, she flipped on. Dallas, what?
Hey, Lieutenant Sugar, a guy might think you didn't care.
I don't have time to play, Charles.
Hey, don't cut me off. I got something for you.
Or for lame innuendos.
No, really. Boy, flirt with a woman once or twice, she never takes it seriously.
His perfect face registered hurt. You asked me to call if I remembered anything, right?
Right.
Patience, she warned herself.
So, did you?
It was the diaries that got me thinking. You know how I said she was always recording everything? Since you're looking for them, I figured they weren't over at her place.
You should be a detective.
I like my line of work. Anyway, I started wondering where she might put them for safekeeping. And I remembered the safe deposit box.
We've already checked it. Thanks anyway.
Oh, well, how'd you get into it without me?
She's dead.
Eve paused on the point of cutting him off.
Without you?
Yeah. A couple 3 years ago, she asked me to sign one for her. Said she didn't want her name on the record.
Eve's heart began to thump.
Then what good would it do her?
Charles' smile was sheepish and charming.
Well, technically, I signed her on as my sister. I've got one in Kansas City, so we listed Sharon as Annie Monroe. She paid the rent, and I just forgot about it. I can't even say for sure if she kept it, but I thought you might want to know.
Where's the bank?
First Manhattan, on Madison.
Listen to me, Charles. You're home, right?
That's right.
You stay there. Right there. I'll be over in 15 minutes. We're going to go banking, you and me.
If that's the best I can do, hey.
Did I give you a hot lead, Lieutenant Sugar?
Just stay put.
She was up and shrugging into her jacket when her link buzzed again.
Dallas!
Dispatch, Dallas. We have a transmission on hold for you. Video blocked. Refuses to identify.
Tracing?
Tracing now.
Then put it through.
She swung up her bag as the audio clicked.
This is Dallas.
Are you alone?
It was a female voice, tremulous.
Yes.
Do you want me to help you?
It wasn't my fault. You have to know it wasn't my fault.
No one's blaming you. Training had Eve picking up on both fear and grief. Just tell me what happened.
He raped me. I couldn't stop him. He raped me. He raped her, too. Then he killed her. He could kill me.
Tell me where you are. She studied her screen, waiting for the trace to come through. I want to help, but I have to know where you are.
Breath hitching, a whimper.
He said it was supposed to be a secret. I couldn't tell. He killed her so she couldn't tell. Now there's me. No one will believe me.
I believe you. I'll help you. Tell me.
She swore as the transmission broke.
Where?
She demanded after switching to dispatch.
Fort Royal, Virginia. Number 703-555-3908. Address.
I don't need it. Get me Captain Ryan Feeney and EDD. Fast. 2 minutes wasn't fast enough. Eve nearly drilled a hole in her temple, rubbing it while she waited.
Feeney, I've got something and it's big.
What?
I can't go into it yet, but I need you to go pick up Charles Monroe.
Christ, Eve, have we got him?
Not yet. Monroe's going to take you to Sharon's other safe box.
You take good care of him, Feeney. We're going to need him, and you take damn good care of whatever you find in the box.
What are you going to be doing?
I've got to catch a plane.
She broke transmission, then called Rourke. It took another 3 minutes of very precious time before he came online.
I was about to call you, Eve. It looks like I have to fly to Dublin. Care to join me?
Rourke, I need your plane. Now. I have to get to Virginia fast. If I go through channels or take public transport, the plane will be ready for you. Terminal C, gate 22.
She closed her eyes.
Thanks.
I owe you.
Her gratitude lasted until she arrived at the gate and found Rourke waiting for her. I don't have time to talk. Her voice was a snap, her long legs eating up the distance from gate to lift. We'll talk on the plane. You're not going with me. This is official.
This is my plane, Lieutenant, he interrupted smoothly as the lift closed them in together, gliding silently up.
Can't you do anything without strings?
Yes. This isn't one of them.
The hatch opened. The flight attendant waited efficiently. Welcome aboard, sir, Lieutenant. Can I offer you refreshments?
No, thank you.
Have the pilot take off as soon as we're cleared.
Rourke took his seat while Eve stood fuming.
We can't take off until you're seated and secured.
I thought you were going to Ireland.
She could argue with him just as easily sitting down.
It's not a priority.
This is.
Eve, before you state your case, I'll outline mine. You're going to Virginia in quite a rush. That points to the DeBlas case and some new information. Beth and Richard are friends, close friends. I don't have many close friends, nor do you. Reverse situations.
What would you do?
She drummed her fingers on the arm of her chair as the plane began to taxi.
This can't be personal.
Not for you.
For me, it's very personal.
Beth contacted me even as I was arranging for the plane to be readied. She asked me to come.
Why?
She wouldn't say.
She didn't have to.
She only had to ask.
Loyalty was a trait Eve had a difficult time arguing against.
I can't stop you from going, but I'm warning you. This is department business.
And the department is in upheaval this morning, he said evenly, because of certain information leaked to the media by an unnamed source.
She hissed out a breath.
Nothing like backing yourself into a corner.
I'm grateful for your help.
Enough to tell me the outcome?
I imagine the cap will be off by the end of the day.
She moved her shoulders restlessly, staring out the window, willing the miles away.
Simpson's going to try to ditch the whole business on his accounting firm. I can't see him pulling it off. The IRS'll get him for tax fraud. I imagine the internal investigation will uncover where he got the money. Considering Simpson's imagination, I'd bet on the standard kickbacks, bribes, and graft.
On the blackmail?
Oh, he was paying her. He admitted as much before his lawyers shut him up. And he'll cop to it once he realizes paying blackmail's a lot less dicey than accessory to murder.
She took out her communicator, requested Feeney's access.
Yo, Dallas!
Did you get them?
Feeney held a small box up so that she could see it in the tiny viewing screen. All labeled and dated. About 20 years worth.
Start with the last entry. Work back.
I should hit destination in about 20 minutes. I'll contact you as soon as I can for a status report.
Hey, Lieutenant Sugar.
Charles edged his way on screen and beamed at her.
How'd I do?
You did good.
Thanks.
Now, until I say different, forget about the safe box, the diaries, everything.
What diaries? He said with a wink.
He blew her a kiss before Feeney elbowed him aside.
I'm heading back to Cop Central now. Stay in touch.
Out.
Eve switched off, slipped the communicator back in her pocket.
Rourke waited a beat.
Lieutenant Sugar?
Shut up, Rourke.
She closed her eyes to ignore him, but couldn't quite wipe the smirk off her face.
When they landed, she was forced to admit that Rourke's name worked even faster than a badge.
In minutes, they were in a powerful rental car and eating up the miles to Fort Royal. She might have objected about being delegated to the passenger seat, but she couldn't fault his driving.
Ever done the Indy?
No.
He spared her a brief glance as they bulleted up Route 95 at just under 100.
But I've driven in a few Grand Prix.
Figures.
She tapped her fingers against the chicken stick when he shot the car into a vertical rise, skimmed daringly and illegally over the top of a small jam of cars.
You say Richard is a good friend. How would you describe him? intelligent, dedicated, quiet. He rarely speaks unless he has something to say. Overshadowed by his father, often at odds with him. How would you describe his relationship with his father? He brought the vehicle down again, wheels barely skidding on the road surface. From the little he might have said, and the things Beth let drop, I'd have to say combative, frustrated. And his relationship with his daughter? The choices she made were in direct opposition to his lifestyle, his, well, morals, if you wish. He's a staunch believer in freedom of choice and expression. Still, I can't imagine any father wanting his daughter to become a woman who sells herself for a living. Wasn't he involved in designing his father's security for the last senatorial campaign? He took the vehicle up again, maneuvered it off the road, muttering something about a shortcut. In the time he took to skim through a glade of trees, over a few residential buildings, and down again onto a quiet suburban street, he was silent. She stopped counting the traffic violations. Family loyalty transcends politics. A man with de Blas's views is either well-loved or well-hated. Richard may disagree with his father, but he'd hardly want him assassinated. And as he specializes in security law, it follows he'd assist his father in the matter. A son protects his father, Eve thought. And how far would de Blas go to protect his son? From what? Richard is a moderate's moderate. He maintains a low profile, supports his causes quietly. The import of the question struck. You're off target, Rourke said between his teeth. Way off target. We'll see. The house on the hill looked peaceful. Under the cold blue sky, it sat serenely, warmly, with a few brave crocuses beginning to peep out of the winter-stung grass. Appearances, Eve thought, were deceiving more often than not. She knew this wasn't a home of easy wealth, quiet happiness, and tidy lives. She was certain now that she knew what had gone on behind those rosy walls and gleaming glass. Elizabeth opened the door herself. If anything, she was paler and more drawn than when Eve had last seen her. Her eyes were puffy from weeping, and the mannishly tailored suit she wore bagged at the hips from recent weight loss. Oh, Rourke! As Elizabeth went into his arms, Eve could all but hear the fragile bones knocking together. I'm sorry I dragged you out here. I shouldn't have bothered you. Don't be silly. He tilted her face up with a gentleness that tugged at the heart Eve was struggling to hold distant. Beth, you're not taking care of yourself. I can't seem to function, to think or to do. Everything's crumbling away at my feet, and I... She broke off, remembering abruptly that they weren't alone. Lieutenant Dallas. Eve caught the quick accusation in Elizabeth's eyes when she looked at Rourke. He didn't bring me, Miss Barrister. I brought him. I received a call this morning from this location. Did you make it? No. Elizabeth stepped back. Her hands reached for each other, twisted. No, I didn't. It must have been Catherine. She arrived here last night, suddenly. Hysterical, overwrought. Her mother has been hospitalized and the prognosis is poor. I can only think the stress of the last few weeks has been too much for her. That's why I called you, Rourke. Richard's at his wit's end. I don't seem to be any help. We needed someone. Why don't we go in and sit down? They're in the parlor. In a jittery move, Elizabeth turned to look down the hall. She won't take a sedative. She won't explain. She refused to let us do more than call her husband and son and tell them she was here and not to come. She's frantic at the idea they might be in some sort of danger. I suppose what happened to Sharon has made her worry more about her own child. She's obsessed with saving him from God knows what. If she called me, Eve put in, then maybe she'll talk to me. Yes. Yes, all right. She led the way down the hall and into the tidy, sun-washed parlor. Catherine de Blas sat on a sofa, leaning into her brother's arms. Eve couldn't be sure if he was comforting or restraining. Richard raised stricken eyes to Rourke's. It's good of you to come.
We're a mess, Rourke. His voice shook, nearly broke. We're a mess.
Elizabeth. Rourke crouched in front of Catherine.
Why don't you ring for coffee?
Oh, of course. I'm sorry.
Catherine? His voice was gentle, as was the hand he laid on her arm. But the touch had Catherine jerking up, her eyes going wide.
Don't! What are you doing here?
I came to see Beth and Richard. I'm sorry you're not well.
Well?
She gave what might have been a laugh as she curled into herself.
None of us will ever be well again. How can we? We're all tainted. We're all to blame.
For what? She shook her head, pushed herself into the far corner of the sofa.
I can't talk to you.
Congresswoman de Blas, I'm Lieutenant Dallas. You called me a little while ago.
No, I didn't.
Panicked, Catherine wrapped her arms tightly around her chest.
I didn't call. I didn't say anything.
As Richard leaned over to touch her, Eve shot him a warning glance. Deliberately, she put herself between them, sat, and took Catherine's frigid hand. You wanted me to help, and I will help you.
You can't. No one can. I was wrong to call. We have to keep it in the family. I have a husband. I have a little boy.
Tears began to swim in her eyes.
I have to protect them. I have to go away, far away, so I can protect them.
We'll protect them, Eve said quietly. We'll protect you. It was too late to protect Sharon. You can't blame yourself.
I didn't try to stop it, Catherine said in a whisper. Maybe I was even glad, because it wasn't me anymore. It wasn't me.
Ms. de Blas, I can help you. I can protect you and your family. Tell me who raped you. Richard let out a hiss of shock. My God, what are you saying? What? Eve turned on him, eyes fierce. Be quiet. There's no more secrets here.
Secrets? Catherine said between trembling lips. It has to be a secret.
No, it doesn't. This kind of secret hurts. It crawls inside you and eats at you. It makes you scared and it makes you guilty. The ones who want it to be secret use that. The guilt, the fear, the shame. The only way you can fight back is to tell. Tell me who raped you. Catherine's breath shuddered out. She looked at her brother, terror bright in her eyes. Eve turned her face back, held it. Look at me, just me, and tell me who raped you. Who raped Sharon?
My father!
The words burst from her in a howl of pain.
My father! My father! My father!
She buried her face in her hands and sobbed.
Oh, God!
Across the room, Elizabeth slumped back into the server droid. China shattered. Coffee seeped dark into the lovely rug.
Oh, my God! My baby!
Richard shot off the couch, reaching her as she swayed. He caught her hard against him. I'll kill him for this. I'll kill him! Then he pressed his face into her hair.
Beth. Oh, Beth.
Do what you can for them, Eve murmured to Rourke as she gathered Catherine to her. You thought it was Richard, Rourke said in an undertone.
Yes.
Her eyes were dull and flat when she lifted them to his. I thought it was Sharon's father. Maybe I didn't want to think that something so foul could flourish in two generations.
Rourke leaned forward. His face was hard as rock.
One way or the other, de Blas is a dead man.
Help your friends, Eve said evenly. I have work to do here. Chapter 18. She let Catherine cry it out, though she knew too well that the tears wouldn't wash the wound clean. She knew, too, that she wouldn't have been able to handle the situation alone. It was Rourke who calmed Elizabeth and Richard, who ordered in the domestic droid to gather up the broken crockery, who held their hands, and when he gauged the time was right, It was he who gently suggested bringing Catherine some tea. Elizabeth fetched it herself, carefully closing the parlor doors behind her before she carried the cup to her sister-in-law.
"Here, darling, drink a little."
"I'm sorry."
Catherine put both shaky hands around the cup to warm them.
"I'm sorry. I thought it had stopped. I made myself believe it had stopped. I couldn't live otherwise."
"It's all right." Her face blank, Elizabeth went back to her husband. "Miss de Blas, I need you to tell me everything." "Congresswoman de Blas." Eve waited until Catherine focused on her again. "Do you understand this is being recorded?"
"He'll stop you."
"No, he won't. That's why you called me, because you know I'll stop him."
"He's afraid of you," Catherine whispered. "He's afraid of you. I could tell. He's afraid of women. That's why he hurts them. I think he may have given something to my mother. Broke her mind. She knew."
"Your mother knew your father was abusing you?"
"She knew. She pretended she didn't, but I could see it in her eyes. She didn't want to know. She just wanted everything quiet and perfect so she could give her parties and be the senator's wife."
She lifted a hand, shielding her eyes.
"When he would come into my room at night, I could see it on her face the next morning. But when I tried to talk to her, to tell her, to make him stop, she pretended she didn't know what I meant. She told me to stop imagining things, to be good, to respect the family."
She lowered her hand again, cupped her tea with both hands, but didn't drink. "When I was little, 7 or 8, he would come in at night and touch me. He said it was all right, because he was Daddy, and I was going to pretend to be Mommy. It was a game, he said, a secret game. He told me I had to do things to touch him, to..."
"It's all right," Eve soothed as Catherine began to tremble violently. "You don't have to say. Tell me what you can."
"You had to obey him. You had to. He was a force in our house." "Richard?"
"Yes." Richard caught his wife's hand in his and squeezed. "I know.
I couldn't tell you because I was ashamed. And I was afraid, and Mom just looked away, so I thought I had to do it."
She swallowed hard.
"On my 12th birthday, we had a party. Lots of friends and a big cake and the ponies. You remember the ponies, Richard?"
"I remember." Tears tracked silently down his cheeks. "I remember."
"And that night, the night of my birthday, he came. He said I was old enough now. He said he had a present for me, a special present because I was growing up. And he raped me."
She buried her face in her hands and rocked.
"He said it was a present. Oh, God. And I begged him to stop because it hurt and because I was old enough to know it was wrong. It was evil. I was evil. But he didn't stop, and he kept coming back all those years until I could get away. I went to college far away where he couldn't touch me, and I told myself it never happened. It never, never happened. I tried to be strong, to make a life. I got married because I thought I would be safe. Justin was so kind, so gentle. He never hurt me. And I never told him. I thought if he knew, he'd despise me. So I kept telling myself it never happened."
She lowered her hands and looked at Eve.
"I believed it sometimes. Most of the time, I could lose myself in my work, in my family. But then I could see. I knew he was doing the same thing to Sharon. I wanted to help, but I didn't know how, so I pushed it away just like my mother did. He killed her. Now he'll kill me."
"Why do you think he killed Sharon?"
"She wasn't weak like me. She turned it on him, used it against him. I heard them arguing Christmas Day, when we all went to his house to pretend we were a family.
I saw them go into his office, and I followed them. I opened the door, and I watched, and I listened through the crack. He was so furious with her because she was making a public mockery of everything he stood for. And she said, "You made me what I am, you bastard." It warmed me to hear that. It made me want to cheer. She stood up to him. She threatened to expose him unless he paid her. She had it all documented, she said, every dirty detail. So he'd have to play the game her way. They fought, hurling words at each other. And then, Catherine glanced over at Elizabeth, at her brother, then looked away. She took off her blouse. Elizabeth's moan had Catherine trembling again. She told him he could have her, just like any client, but he'd pay more, a lot more. He was looking at her. I knew the way he was looking at her, his eyes glazed over, his mouth slack. He grabbed her breasts. She looked at me, right at me. She'd known I was there, and she looked at me with such disgust. Maybe even with hate, because she knew I'd do nothing. I closed the door, closed it, and ran. I was sick. Oh, Elizabeth! It's not your fault. She must have tried to tell me. I never saw. I never heard. I never thought. I was her mother, and I didn't protect her. I tried to talk to her. Catherine gripped her hands together. When I went to New York for the fundraiser, she said I'd chosen my way and she'd chosen hers, and hers was better. I played politics, kept my head buried, and she played with power and kept her eyes opened. When I heard she was dead, I knew. At the funeral, I watched him, and he watched me watching him. He came up to me, put his arms around me, held me close as if in comfort, and he whispered to me to pay attention, to remember, and to see what happened when families don't keep secrets. And he said what a fine boy Franklin was, what big plans he had for him. He said how proud I should be, and how careful. She closed her eyes. What can I do? He's my child. No one's going to hurt your son. Eve closed a hand over Catherine's rigid ones. I promise you. I'll never know if I could have saved her. Your child, Richard. You can know you're doing everything possible now. Hardly aware she'd taken Catherine's hand, Eve tightened her grip in reassurance. It's going to be difficult for you, Ms. DeBlass, to go over all of this again, as you'll have to face the publicity, to testify should it come to trial.
He'll never let it go to trial, Catherine said wearily.
I'm not going to give him a choice. Maybe not on murder, she thought. Not yet. But she had him cold on sexual abuse. Miss Barrister, I think your sister-in-law should rest now. Could you help her upstairs?
Yes, of course.
Elizabeth rose, walked over to help Catherine to her feet.
Let's go lie down for a bit, darling.
I'm sorry.
Catherine leaned heavily against Elizabeth as she was led from the room.
God forgive me, I'm so sorry.
There's a psychiatric counselor attached to the department, Mr. DeBlass. I think your sister should see her.
Yes.
He said it absently, staring at the closed door.
She'll need someone. Something.
You all will, Eve thought. Are you up to a few questions?
I don't know. He's a tyrant. Difficult. But this makes him a monster. How am I to accept that my own father is a monster?
He has an alibi for the night of your daughter's death, Eve pointed out. I can't charge him without more.
An alibi?
The record shows that Rockman was with your father, working with him in his East Washington office until nearly 2 on the night of your daughter's death.
Rockman would say whatever my father told him to say,
including covering up murder.
It's simply a matter of the easiest way out. Why should anyone believe my father is connected?
He shuddered once,
as if blasted with a sudden chill. Rockman's statement merely detaches his employer from any suspicion. How would your father travel back and forth to New York from East Washington if he wanted no record of the trip?
I don't know. If his shuttle went out, there would be a log.
Logs can be altered, Rourke said.
Yes.
Richard looked up as if remembering all at once that his friend was there.
You'd know more about that than I.
A reference to my smuggling days, Rourke explained to Eve. Long behind me. It can be done, but it would require some payoffs. The pilot, perhaps the mechanic, certainly the air engineer. So I know where to put the pressure on. And if Eve could prove his shuttle had taken the trip on that night, she'd have probable cause, enough to break him. How much do you know about your father's weapon collection?
More than I care to.
Richard rose on unsteady legs. He went to a cabinet, splashed liquor into a glass. He drank it fast, like medicine.
He enjoys his guns, often shows them off. When I was younger, he tried to interest me in them. Rourke can tell you, it didn't work.
Richard believes guns are a dangerous symbol of power abuse, and I can tell you that, yes, de Blas occasionally used the black market. Why didn't you mention that before?
You didn't ask.
She let it drop for now. Does your father have a knowledge of security, the technical aspects?
Certainly. He takes pride in knowing how to protect himself. It's one of the few things we can discuss without disagreeing.
Would you consider him an expert?
No,
Richard said slowly.
A talented amateur.
His relationship with Chief Simpson, how would you describe it?
Self-serving. He considered Simpson a fool. My father enjoys utilizing fools.
Abruptly, he sank into a chair. I'm sorry. I can't do this. I need some time. I need my wife.
All right, Mr. de Blas.
I'm going to order surveillance on your father. You won't be able to reach him without being monitored. Please don't try.
You think I'll try to kill him?
Richard gave a mirthless laugh and stared down at his own hands.
I want to. For what he did to my daughter, to my sister, to my life. I wouldn't have the courage.
When they were outside again, Eve headed straight for the car without looking at Rourke.
You suspected this? She asked.
That de Blas was involved?
Yes, I did.
But you didn't tell me?
No.
Rourke stopped her before she could wrench open the door. It was a feeling, Eve. I had no idea about Catherine. Absolutely none. I suspected that Sharon and de Blas were having an affair. That's too clean a word for it.
I suspected it, he continued,
because of the way she spoke of him during our single dinner together. But again, it was a feeling, not a fact. That feeling would have done nothing to enhance your case. And, he added, turning her to face him, once I got to know you, I kept that feeling to myself because I didn't want to hurt you. She jerked her head away. He brought it patiently back with his fingertips.
You had no one to help you?
It isn't about me.
But she let out a shuddering breath.
I can't think about it, Rourke. I can't. I'll mess up if I do. And if I mess up, he could get away with it. With rape and murder. With abusing the children he should have been protecting. I won't let him.
Didn't you say to Catherine that the only way to fight back was to tell?
I have work to do. He fought back frustration. I assume you'll want to go to the Washington airport where de Blas keeps his shuttle.
Yes.
She climbed in the car when Rourke walked around to get in the driver's side. You can drop me at the nearest transport station.
I'm sticking, Eve.
All right, fine. I need to check in. As he drove down the winding lane, she put in a call to Feeney. I've got something hot here, she said before he could speak. I'm on my way to East Washington.
You got something hot?
Feeney's voice was almost a song.
Didn't have to look farther than her final entry, Dallas. Logged the morning of her murder. God knows why she took it to the bank. Blind luck. She had a date at midnight. You'll never guess who.
Her grandfather.
Feeney goggled, sputtered. Fuck it, Dallas, how'd you get it?
Eve closed her eyes briefly. Tell me it's documented, Feeney. Tell me she names him. Calls him the senator. Calls him her old fart of a granddaddy. And she writes pretty cheerfully about the $5,000 she charges him for each boink. Quote, it's almost worth letting him slobber all over me. And there's a lot of energy left in dear old granddad, the bastard. $5,000 every couple of weeks isn't such a bad deal. I sure as hell give him his money's worth. Not like when I was a kid and he used me. Tables turned. I won't turn into a dried-up prune like poor Aunt Catherine. I'm thriving on it now, and one day, when it bores me enough, I'm sending my diaries to the media. Multiple copies. It drives the bastard crazy when I threaten to do that. Maybe I'll twist the knife a little tonight. Give the senator a good scare. Christ, it's wonderful to have the power to make him squirm after all he's done to me. Feeney shook his head. It was a long-time deal, Dallas. I've run through several entries. She earned a nice income from blackmail and names names and deeds, but this puts the senator at her place on the night of her death, and that puts his balls in the old nutcracker. Can you get me a warrant? Commander's orders are to patch it through the minute you called in. He says to pick him up. Murder one, 3 counts. She let out a slow breath. Where do I find him? He's at the Senate building, hawking his morals bill. Fucking perfect. I'm on my way. She switched off, turned to Rourke. How much faster can this thing go? We'll find out. If Whitney's orders hadn't come through with the warrant, instructing her to be discreet, Eve would have marched onto the Senate floor and cuffed him in front of his associates. Still, there was considerable satisfaction in the way it went down. She waited while he completed his impassioned speech on the moral decline of the country, the insidious corruption that stemmed from promiscuity, conception control, genetic engineering. He expounded on the lack of morality in the young, the dearth of organized religion in the home, the school, the workplace. Our one nation under God had become godless. Our constitutional right to bear arms sundered by the liberal left. He touted figures on violent crime, on urban decay, on bootleg drugs, all a result, the senator claimed, of our increasing moral decline, our softness on criminals, our indulgence in sexual freedom without responsibility. It made Eve sick to listen. In the year 2016, she said softly, at the end of the urban revolt, before the gun ban, there were over 10,000 deaths and injuries from guns in the borough of Manhattan alone. She continued to watch de Blas sell his snake oil while Rourke laid a hand at the base of her spine. Before we legalized prostitution, there was a rape or attempted rape every 3 seconds. Of course, we still have rape because it has much less to do with sex than power, but the figures have dropped. Licensed prostitutes don't have pimps, so they aren't beaten, battered, killed. And they can't use drugs. There was a time when women went to butchers to deal with an unwanted pregnancy, when they had to risk their lives or ruin them. Babies were born blind, deaf, deformed before genetic engineering, and the research it made possible to repair in vitro. It's not a perfect world, but you listen to him and you realize it could be a lot worse. Do you know what the media is going to do to him when this hits? Crucify him, Eve murmured. I hope to God it doesn't make him a martyr. The voice of the moral right, suspected of incest, trucking with prostitutes, committing murder? I don't think so. He's finished. Rourke nodded, in more ways than one. Eve heard the thunderous applause from the gallery. From the sound of it, de Blas's team had been careful to pepper the spectators with their own. Discretion be damned, she thought as the gavel was struck and an hour's recess was called. She moved through the milling aides, assistants, and pages until she came to de Blas. He was being congratulated on his eloquence, slapped on the back by his senatorial supporters. She waited until he saw her, until his gaze skimmed over her, then Rourke, until his mouth tightened. Lieutenant, if you need to speak with me, we can adjourn briefly to my office, alone. I can spare 10 minutes.
You're going to have plenty of time, Senator. Senator de Blas, you are under arrest for the murders of Sharon de Blas, Lola Starr, and Georgie Castle. As he blustered in protest and the murmurs began, she lifted her voice. Additional charges include the incestuous rapes of Catherine de Blas, your daughter, and Sharon de Blas, your granddaughter. He was still standing, frozen, in shock, when she linked the restraints over his wrist, turned him, and secured his hands behind his back. You are under no obligation to make a statement.
This is an outrage!
He exploded over the standard recitation of revised Miranda.
I'm a senator of the United States. This is federal property.
And these two federal agents will escort you, she added. You are entitled to an attorney or representative. As she continued to recite his rights, a flash from her eyes had the federal deputies and onlookers backing off. Do you understand these rights?
I'll have your badge, you bitch.
He began to wheeze as she muscled him through the crowd. I'll take that as a yes. Catch your breath, Senator. We can't have you popping off with a cardiac. She leaned closer to his ear. And you won't have my badge, you bastard. I'm going to have your ass. She turned him over to the federal agents. They're waiting for him in New York, she said briefly. She could hardly be heard now. De Blas was screaming, demanding immediate release. The Senate had erupted with voices and bodies. Through it, she spotted Rockman. He came toward her, his face a cold mask of fury. You're making a mistake, Lieutenant. No, I'm not. But you made one in your statement. The way I see it, that's going to make you accessory after the fact. I'm going to start working on that when I get back to New York. Senator de Blas is a great man. You're nothing but a pawn for the Liberal Party and their plans to destroy him. Senator de Blas is an incestuous child molester, a rapist, and a murderer. And what I am, pal, is the cop who's taking him down. You'd better call a lawyer unless you want to sink with him. Rourke had to force himself not to snatch her up as she swept through the hallowed Senate halls. Members of the media were already leaping toward her, but she cut through them as if they weren't there.
I like your style, Lieutenant Dallas, he said when they'd fought their way to the car. I like it a lot. And by the way, I don't think I'm in love with you anymore.
I know I am. She swallowed hard on the nausea rising in her throat. Let's get out of here. Let's get the hell out of here. Sheer force of will kept her steady until she got to the plane. It kept her voice flat and expressionless as she reported in to her superior. Then she stumbled, and shoving away from Rourke's supporting arms, rushed into the head to be wretchedly and violently ill. On the other side of the door, Rourke stood helplessly. If he understood her at all, it was to know that comforting would make it worse. He murmured instructions to the flight attendant and took his seat. While he waited, he stared out at the tarmac. He looked up when the door opened. She was ice pale, her eyes too big, too dark. Her usually smooth gait was coltish and stiff. Sorry. I guess it got to me. When she sat, he offered a mug. Drink this. It'll help. What is it? It's tea. A whiff of whiskey. I'm on duty, she began, but his quick, vicious eruption cut her off. Drink, goddammit, or I'll pour it into you! He flipped a switch and ordered the pilot to take off. Telling herself it was easier than arguing, she lifted the mug, but her hands weren't steady. She barely managed to get a sip through her chattering teeth before she set it aside. She couldn't stop shaking. When Rourke reached for her, she drew herself back. The sickness was still there, sliding slyly through her stomach, making her head pound evilly. My father raped me. She heard herself say it. The shock of it. Hearing her own voice say the words mirrored in her eyes. Repeatedly. And he beat me, repeatedly. If I fought or I didn't fight, it didn't matter. He still raped me. He still beat me. And there was nothing I could do. There's nothing you can do when the people who are supposed to take care of you abuse you that way. Use you. Hurt you. Eve. He took her hand then, holding firm when she tried to yank free. I'm